Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio on the 2nd of January, 2013. Welcome to the show and welcome to another year. Truth News Radio is going to continue broadcasting original and, we hope, incisive and meaningful content for the foreseeable future. And we hope that you've enjoyed everything we've done over the last year. We've been broadcasting live on the Logos Network for close to on a year now. And we've been running the show as a podcast since about March, April of 2008. So we're getting on to 5 years of the show actually being available online. And I thought, since we're kicking off a new year, I would like to go through and reiterate some of the key themes and some of the key issues that I regard as being central to what we focus on here at Truth News. And for those of you who are joining the first time, welcome. My name's Harrywood Fenton. Really pleased to be able to speak to you today. And we are an Australian-based show, but of course we cover world events and we try to relate local events to trends going on around the planet. You can find us at www.truthnews.com.au if you'd like to get our podcasts. Now, turning to the question of what is the key focus? What are the key issues and our standpoints on this show that really form the basis of what we're all about? I want to start with emphasizing that our main goal is truth in media, hence the name. It's not just a pretty name. Like we chose that name because that's what we're on about. And, you know, it's a tricky thing because when you decide that you want to communicate the truth, you realize that so much of what is communication is about people trying to sell you something, trying to push an agenda. And there are so many different types of biases that are always part of those agendas that are being pushed. And usually there's some kind of financial reason why that would be done. Now, on this show, there is no financial gain either way. So that's one thing to rule out. And in terms of popularity as well, like I'm not keen to simply build popularity. It would be relatively easy to do that by focusing on issues that have big kind of interest groups or cults attached to them. But I'm actually genuinely interested in the truth. That's actually what fascinates me. And I actually want to draw to this show listeners who have that same kind of interest in really understanding what's going on. Whether it basically confirms your beliefs and prejudices or whether it actually doesn't, that's the key to it, is that when you do look for the truth, you're prepared to have your beliefs shattered. And I am at every turn. Like I'm willing to let the facts and the evidence and whatever new things that I discover shake the foundations of my beliefs. And it's happened a few times. And I've changed. I've swung back and forth on a number of subjects. It's extremely confusing, I have to say. It's a difficult space to be in, but I'm beginning to like it more and more. I'm beginning to like the feeling that I don't have to be tied to a set of viewpoints. I don't have to be tied to a belief about the world that is also an ideology, because that's usually what it's all about. People have an ideology, whether that's religious or political or just some sort of ethnic set of prejudices that then ties in their views on a variety of subjects. And I've tried to expose that a lot on this show, how in fact agendas are being pushed by manipulating data to say, well, you know, this is a fact. Of course, climate change is one of the classic ones that we've looked at on this show. And we've seen with the climate change agenda that, in fact, there is an agenda for a changing society, for wealth redistribution, for a model of society which is about collectivization, collectivism, and the hive mind. And there are plenty of quotes, there are plenty of examples of the major individuals behind this movement which actually confirm that. They've actually said it numerous times, and it's there. And when you see that there is an agenda at work, when you see there's an ideology and an agenda, you can understand how they take data and they manipulate it to confirm the agenda. So with this show, the purpose is to identify what the agendas are, where we see them, and to see if the facts are borne out, to see if the facts as presented by whoever's out there saying stuff, and mostly this is coming to us through the prism of the mainstream media, to see if that is actually borne out by the data that we can find. And, you know, this may seem incredibly obvious and boring, but it's actually not. It's actually quite tricky. So, yeah, what are our main foci? What are our main themes on this show? Well, truth. Truth in media. Okay. Truth in relation to events that are going on in the world that are of extreme importance to human welfare, to life, to liberty, to happiness. So, yeah, we look at international conflicts. We look at wars, and we look at internal conflicts within nations. We look at the environment, and we look at what is going on, what are the real threats to our environment, what are the purported threats to our living environment that are brought to us through the media, and we try to say, well, do they actually match up? Or are we being given one set of information and then other information being completely ignored? And indeed, that's what we find. We look at health. We look at the quality of human health and happiness in total. I mean, we're looking at physical, biological, mental, spiritual health. And we're trying to evaluate whether or not the information that we're getting from the media and the ways in which we're being told that we should take care of ourselves and what we should eat and what kind of substances we should imbibe or ingest or inject are actually helping us to be healthy and happy. And again, we find that they don't match up. We find that there are things that we're doing that are being more or less ignored, that are extremely problematic, that there are things that we're being told to do which are also problematic. There are ways in which we could restore our health and have a good quality lifestyle that aren't being promoted at all, really. I mean, of course, there always are voices out there, and I shouldn't say at all. I just mean, you know, it's a very, very small part of the mix of what people are actually getting through the channels of mainstream information. We look at scientific questions related to all of the above. So whether it's the collapse of the Twin Towers on September 11, whether it's the effect of genetically modified foods on your body, whether it's psychotropic pharmaceuticals that are being doled out by GPs like candy in a candy store, whether it's CFL light bulbs, which are full of mercury, whether it's fluoride in your water, all of these many, many, many environmental issues, and of course, the effect of conflicts, the effect of the quality of people's life in terms of all of the forces that are acting on us as a society and as in individuals. So I hope that just gives you an overview. I mean, it's just a quick off-the-cuff overview of what I'm trying to do with this show, what I believe is important, and why. And I want to turn now to actually look at a story which exemplifies the way in which, the way in which agendas and scientific information, political agendas, and the quality of people's lives are all kind of funneled into one giant con, if you like. Basically, we are being led down a garden path by people who are pulling strings. And the example I want to give you is something that's in the news today. And it's about single parents on Newstart, when their child turns 8, being forced to basically go get a job. I mean, there used to be a government benefit, and that government benefit still exists, but it now cuts off when the child turns 8. And it turns out that this government benefit, by being cancelled at that age now, will save the government about $110 a week for every individual. And there's at least 84,000 people who are going to be affected by that immediately. And now some quick calculations that I've done put that figure for a total for a year at around about $500 million. So in 1 year, the government is going to save $500 million that it would otherwise have paid out in these benefits. And what I think is interesting, and again, this is the type of thinking that I apply to these sort of issues, is that when the carbon tax was brought in middle of last year, it was announced with a huge amount of fanfare that, in fact, not only would poorer people be better off, not worse off, they would be, in fact, compensated and, in fact, better off. And it did seem to be the case. But then shortly on the heels of that, the announcements about the cutbacks started to filter through. We're going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us. We'll be right back after these messages.
Propaganda. Disinformation. Misinformation. Deception. Deceit. Spin. Untruths. Half-truths. Lies. You know the truth. Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia. www.truthnews.com.au.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. So used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the mix.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be here today on the radio talking to you. I enjoy it very much, and I appreciate the ability to let you know my take on what's going on, and I very much would like to know yours. So if you'd like to send a message in, if you'd like to contact me, please do. Send an email to editor@truthnews.com.au, or just drop into the website and leave a comment or use the contact option on the webpage. Now, just covering a story here from the Australian News about the changes to the New Start allowance, or changes to the Social Security government benefit for people who are single parents. And what, really, let me just try and emphasize the point here, is that we have been subjected to just a massive trick by a government that's moving money around. And as I said at the previous segment, that these compensations that were doled out to the carbon tax, well, that money had to come from somewhere, you know. Like, you know, it doesn't just come off trees. They had to actually get it from somewhere. And it's quite incredible that on the heels of that, they've now shown, well, actually, yes, well, it's coming out of the single parent benefit. I mean, we're talking $500 million a year from that. So you've just been subjected to a complete con. You've been ripped off. You've been tricked, and you're going to just have to wear it. And yet I know that there are millions of people out there who aren't going to understand the connection. They're not going to see it. They're not going to realize, oh, well, the government's just moved some money around. They've taken some from here. They've moved it over there. But, you know, we've got this carbon tax, which is now permanent, and that can be increased. But the real problem is the inability of a lot of people to see the manipulation. And, of course, people will object to what I'm saying, and they'll say, oh, there's no connection here. It's just coincidental. And of course, a lot of people will say, oh, these parents that are just sponging off the government, you know, they should go to work. And you know what? Maybe they're right. Maybe the government shouldn't be giving handouts to single parents. But that's not the point here. You see, again, if you buy into that, you're just being led up the garden path. You're being tricked and conned again into some debate that's not, it's a trick, okay? These benefits have been in place for a very long time. Things have been juggled around. New taxes have been brought in. Compensations were given to a whole lot of people at the lower spectrum of income, and now money is being taken away from a whole lot of people at the lower spectrum of income, taken away from one area, given in another area. And that is the key point to understand. The question about whether or not the government should be handing out money to unemployed people, to single parents, to people with disabilities, that's a debate that needs to happen. But again, the spin masters will always use the inherent prejudices in people to, I guess, justify measures like this. Because there'll be a lot of people saying, yeah, it's about time those sponging single parents were, you know, taught a lesson and forced them to go to work. And, you know, that really, it's really sad. It's really pathetic that people are so easily manipulated. And, you know, I wish that what I'm saying now could actually be accessed by those people, but I know they won't be listening to this show. But they are the putty in the hands of the politicians and big business forces, which are basically just squeezing and squeezing and squeezing and degrading our quality of life. So there it is. Look, I'll leave it to you to take a look at those articles. The Australian changes will encourage work. This is from Jenny Macklin. I'll just read to you briefly from this article here. Changes that will move single parents onto the New Start allowance when their youngest child turns 8 are aimed at getting people into work. Now, again, this is incredible. They're reframing the whole thing again, to make it look like, hey, we're doing something really positive here. We're going to help people get into work. Yeah, we're cutting their money off because we love them. The changes came into effect on Tuesday and will affect 84,000 single parents who are currently receiving parenting payments. It will save the budget $728 million over 4 years. Well, actually, according to my calculations, it was more than that, because I also read from another source that it was $110 a week. But anyway, this is from The Australian, $728 million over 4 years. But welfare groups say it will lead to more people falling into poverty. Ms. Macklin defended the changes on Tuesday, saying that they would encourage people to work. We understand what is important for people who are unemployed is that we do everything possible to help people get work. Anyway, I'll leave you with that. It's a pretty uninteresting story. And of course, a follow-up to that is Jenny Macklin said on national television that she thought that the Newstart allowance was quite adequate and that she could actually live on it. And it turns out she gets $6,000 a week. The Newstart allowance is about $246 a week, I believe. And Jenny Macklin gets $6,000 per week in her current role. As well, that's a big gap. I mean, just think about that. Now, what Jenny Macklin is earning, let's just translate that into its yearly income of around about about $250,000 roughly. Let's say it's $250,000 a year. Now, and the lower end, people who are on the dole, are getting maybe $15,000 less a year. So it's really almost a 20-to-1 ratio. And that's an incredible piece of information there in itself. A 20-to-1 ratio. And bear in mind, $250,000 a year is not vastly wealthy. I mean, there are a lot of people on that. People who are working in banking, people who have got, you know, high-powered professional jobs, but not at the top. I'm not talking CEOs or anything like that. We're just talking people who've got good, solid professional careers are earning around about that all over the place. It's very common. And the people at the lower end of the spectrum are making 1/20th of that if they're actually on the dole. Now, if they're actually working in low-paid jobs, you know what? They're not earning a heap more than the dole either. They might be earning $600 a week. You know, they might be earning double or triple the dole. You know, that's very common. But that's still on the order of, I can't just do the math in my head, but you can see it's still the gap between the moderately wealthy and the working poor, as you might want to call them, is so vast that in itself is a sign that our society is in big trouble. And I believe that gap has actually increased dramatically over the last 30 years. The gap between the people who are the battlers, who are working, solidly working, but are on the lower end of the pay spectrum, and the people who are doing well, and of course the super elites, again in a whole other category. But these gaps between people's prosperity are a sign that we have a very, very serious situation developing in Australia and the world. With Truth News Radio, we'll be right back after this break.
Man to man is so unjust. children. Yeah, I don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend. And your best friend, your worst enemy.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. It is awesome to be talking to you today, and I would like to continue now with a look at psychiatry. After the Sandy Hook shootings, we've seen some talk about the connection between psychiatric medications and aberrant behavior, and I had Rochelle McCready on my show a couple of weeks ago talking about that. But again, it has been really the sub-theme of that. It received very little attention in the media. Of course, the focus has been on, you know, whether we should ban guns in the United States. When I say we, I mean in the US. Of course, in Australia, assault weapons have been banned for almost two decades now, and it's been the source of a lot of conflict within our society, because many people think that that was unfair and unreasonable. But I don't want to get into the legalities of weapons, that specific debate today. I really want to talk about psychiatry on a bigger picture. And I want to give you a little bit of news of some trends, and one in particular. I've got an article here actually from the Washington Post, that indicates that psychiatrists are now saying that people who are grieving, people who've had a loved one die, can be legitimately treated with antidepressants. And I mean, this is a major change, and this actually allows far more prescriptions to be written than is currently the case. And already we've got an unbelievable amount of it in general society. I had Rochelle on a couple of weeks ago telling us that up to 20% of people are already taking psychotropic medications for mental illness. But this will only increase if these new changes go through. And I'll just read you here the article from the Washington Post from the 26th of December 2012. Antidepressants to treat grief. Psychiatry panelists with ties to the drug industry say yes. It was a simple experiment in healing the bereaved. 22 patients who had recently lost a spouse were given a widely used antidepressant. The drug, marketed as Wellbutrin, improved major depressive symptoms occurring shortly after the loss of a loved one. And this is from a report in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry. Now, just reading from the article, when should the bereaved be medicated? For years, the Handbook of Psychiatry, issued by the American Psychiatric Association, advised against diagnosing major depression when the distress is better accounted for by bereavement. Such grief, experts said, was better left to nature. But that may be changing. In what some prominent critics have called a bonanza for the drug companies, the American Psychiatric Association this month voted to drop the warning against diagnosing depression in the bereaved, opening the way for more of them to be diagnosed with major depression and thus treated with antidepressants. The change in the handbook, which could have significant financial implications for the $10 billion US antidepressant market, was developed in large part by people affiliated with the pharmaceutical industry, as shown by an examination of financial disclosures. The association itself depends in part on industry funding, and the majority of experts on the committee that drafted the new diagnostic guideline have either received research grants from the drug companies, held stock in them, or served them as speakers or consultants. Drug companies have shown an interest in treating patients who have recently lost a loved one, having sponsored and published the results of at least three trials in which the bereaved were treated with antidepressants, including the Wellbutrin study. So it's clear the pharmaceutical industry has a great reason to think this is a good idea, and wouldn't blame them. They want to make money. This is going to be a good money spinner. And we're reading here an article from the Washington Post, a very conservative major mainstream publication. You know, the information's out there, but you know, this information has been out there for decades and decades, freely available, and yet nothing changes. In fact, things keep getting worse along this path. It just keeps increasing. You've got to dig to find these types of articles, but they exist. They're out there, and they illustrate really a worst-case scenario unfolding with the psychiatric industry. And I'd actually like to read to you now a letter, which is the letter of resignation from a very prominent psychiatrist who was a skeptic and a dissident within psychiatry in regard to the treatment of mental illnesses across the board. He was against antipsychotic drugs as well as antidepressants. And his name is Lauren R. Mosher. And he actually died in 2004. But as I was doing some reading and picked up some information, I read this article and I thought, okay, this is actually worth passing on. And this is actually the letter of resignation that he sent to the American Psychiatric Association. And it's dated the 4th of December, 1998. Just again, so you understand that this is nothing new. And in fact, even then, in 1998, it was nothing new. I mean, this had been going on for decades and decades. The letter is from Lauren R. Mosher to Rodrigo Munoz, president of the American Psychiatric Association. Dear Rod, after nearly three decades as a member, it is with a mixture of pleasure and disappointment that I submit this letter of resignation from the American Psychiatric Association. The major reason for this action is my belief that I am currently resigning from the American Psychopharmacological Association. Luckily, the organization's true identity requires no change in the acronym. Unfortunately, APA reflects and reinforces in word and deed our drug-dependent society. And yet it helps wage war on drugs. Dual diagnosis clients are a major problem for the field, but not because of the good drugs we prescribe. Bad ones are those that are obtained mostly without a prescription. The APA only likes those drugs from which it can derive a profit, directly or indirectly. So you know, he's basically saying here, just to explicate here, he's saying that, in fact, we have this situation where, on the one hand, the media and the government is telling us we've got to stamp out illicit drug use. It's a terrible problem. And on the other hand, we have an increasing industry of getting people hooked on drugs. And the two things are happening simultaneously. It's just mind-bending, isn't it? Anyway, to continue from the letter. This organization, the APA, is not a group for me. At this point in history, in my view, psychiatry has been almost completely bought out by the drug companies. The APA could not continue without the pharmaceutical company support of meetings, symposia, workshops, journal advertising, grand rounds, luncheons, unrestricted educational grants, etc., etc. Psychiatrists have become the minions of drug company promotions. The APA, of course, maintains that its independence and autonomy are not compromised in this enmeshed situation. Now, I'm just going to skip ahead because this letter is quite long, and I just want to focus on some of the key points here. No longer do we seek to understand whole persons in their social contexts. Rather, we are there to realign our patient's neurotransmitters. Now, I'm just going to actually jump to another article where he continues on the theme of the problem of treating patients simply on the basis of a chemical malfunction. And this is actually from another article titled, I Want No Part of It Anymore. The trouble began in the late 1970s when I conducted a controversial study. I opened a program where new diagnosed schizophrenic patients lived medication-free with young non-professional staff trained to listen and understand them and provide companionship. The idea was that schizophrenia can often be overcome with the help of meaningful relationships rather than with drugs, and that such treatment would eventually lead to unquestionably healthier lives. The experiment worked better than expected. Over the initial 6 weeks, patients recovered as quickly as those treated with medication in hospitals. We're just going to break. I'll be right back. Stay with me. You're with Truth News, Radio Australia. Welcome back. You're tuned to Truth News. And I'm just going through some unpleasant matters here in relation to modern psychiatry. And I'd just like to digress for one moment to talk a bit about the treatment of depression. And we were going through there some subjects brought up by Lauren Mosher in his resignation from the American Psychiatric Association. But the issue of the prescription of antidepressants is one that's very, very pressing, because people are being put on antidepressant drugs at the drop of a hat. And you may be shocked to find out, as I was, how easy it is to get put on these drugs, especially if you're an older person, especially if you're a pensioner, an elderly person living on your own. A very high proportion of these people are on these drugs. I don't think we even know clearly, because often they themselves aren't aware of it. I mean, it should be in the official statistics, but I don't even know if we can fully trust the official statistics. Because bear in mind, these people are being put on the drugs by GPs. It's just a very straightforward, matter-of-fact thing. No deep diagnosis, no referral to a specialist, none of that. You just go to the GP and you say, look, you know, I'm not feeling myself at the moment. And they'll ask you a couple of questions. They've got some checklist they probably go through. And I think if you indicate a few flags, like, you know, you're not enjoying yourself, you normal things you do, you don't enjoy anymore, they'll go, oh, tick, tick, tick. Oh, you've got major depression. And they'll just write you out a prescription. And yet the drug that they're prescribing to you has major, major effects, major side effects, major risks, major dangers, which you won't be told about. You won't know anything about it. They'll just give it to you like they're giving you an aspirin. You know, oh, here's something that might actually, you know, make you feel a bit better. A major drug that actually interferes with the brain, where your brain works, is being treated like it's almost nothing. And again, These are not cheap drugs, but a lot of the people who are being prescribed the drugs are getting them through government health programs. In Australia, we have Medicare, which is a taxpayer-funded universal healthcare program, and almost all the people who are on these drugs are getting them for next to nothing. But of course, we're all paying for it through our taxes. And the drug companies are charging an arm and a leg for these drugs. They are making unbelievable profits out of this. And I believe that if there is one thing we should try and focus on in terms of reining in the rapacious and obnoxious pharmaceutical industry, it is the ability of GPs to write out prescriptions for psychotropic medications, particularly antidepressants. But there are quite a few others, including medications that are given out for losing weight or for migraine headaches and a number of other common ailments, including the flu, including Tamiflu, which is psychotropic and has actually caused hallucinations and suicides in people. But the point here that I think is worth making is that we need to do something. And I think we have the ability, if we got together, if people in large enough numbers got together and formed a movement to say, no prescription of psychiatric medications by a GP. It's got to be referred to a professional. I mean, would you let your GP prescribe chemotherapy? Would you let your GP just sort of put you on insulin because he thinks you might have diabetes? No. And yet it's funny. Those who promote the use of these drugs say, oh, it's just like diabetes, you know. It's just a chemical imbalance and we're just going to treat it. But the GP, how can the GP know what it is? He hasn't done any tests. He's just asked you a few questions and you said, oh, I don't enjoy watching the sport anymore. I don't enjoy watching the cricket. Oh, you know, ding, you've got major depression. Here's the drug. This is the way they're operating. So if there's anyone out there who's interested in this, get back to me because I think we need some kind of movement of people to get together and pressure our government in Australia, and why not worldwide, to say no more prescription of antidepressant medications by GPs. That's it. Finished. Anyway, I'll just return now to the article I was reading from by Lauren R. Mosher. So he was talking there about an experiment where people with schizophrenia were actually being just given attention and talk to and just having communication. And it says here, over the initial 6 weeks, patients recovered just as quickly as those treated with medication. The results of the study were published in scores of psychiatric journals, nursing journals, and books. But the project lost its funding and the facility was closed. Amid the storm of controversy that followed, control of the research project was taken out of my hands, and I faced an investigation into my behavior as chief of the National Institute of Mental Health's Center for Studies of Schizophrenia, and I was excluded from prestigious academic events. By 1980, I was removed from my post altogether. All this occurred because of my strong stand against the overuse of medication and disregard for drug-free psychological interventions to treat psychological disorders. Why does the world of psychiatry find me so threatening? Because drug companies pour millions of dollars into the pockets of psychiatrists, making them reluctant to recognize that drugs may not always be in the best interest of their patients. They are too busy enjoying drug company perks, consultant gigs, research grants, fine wine, and fancy meals. Pharmaceutical companies pay through the nose to get their message across to psychiatrists across the country. They finance symposia, they offer conventions, yummy treats, music, $1,000 to $2,000 per speaker at speaking events. It is estimated that in total, drug companies spend an average of $10,000 per physician per year on education. And for, you know, education, you know, equals junkets. Yeah, it's basically an incredible bonanza for those people in that profession. And we're just continuing here from the article. Doctors for Hire only tells half the story. How widely is it known, for example, that Prozac and its successor antidepressants cause sexual dysfunction in as many as 70% of people taking them? What is even scarier is the greed that is directing a good deal of drug testing. It is estimated that drug manufacturers have, on average, 12 years to recoup costs and make profits on a given medication before a generic form can be made. So pressure to test new drugs mounts. In the field of psychiatric drug testing, organizations make a profit of as much as $40,000 for every patient who successfully completes a trial. And university psychiatry departments, private research clinics, and some individual doctors live on this money. Well, that is just a taste here of some of the writings of Lauren R. Mosher, and the website there you can get from our website, mosherostoria.com. And I got some of this information from a man in Australia, Benjamin Merhav, who has been sending out his newsletters for many years. I've been reading them, and I actually corresponded with him recently. And I'm actually hoping to get him on the show sometime in the next few weeks, because he has a lot more information and some really interesting original research and discoveries of his own to point out. Now, we're just almost at the end of the hour, but I'd like to just turn now to a local story from Australia that illustrates how out of control the psychiatric drugging industry has become. And this is a story from Western Australia about a man who was just pulled off the street and mistaken for a mental hospital inmate who had been under involuntary commitment. And he was the wrong guy. The original guy had escaped. This man was just walking down the street, and they thought it was him. They grabbed him, took him to the hospital, and put him on very, very powerful psychiatric medications. And I'll just play to you here a short clip from ABC Radio on that topic.
Mental health advocates have expressed deep concern after the wrong man was detained and drugged at a mental hospital in Perth. While the WA government says it hopes it's a one-off incident, AM has been told of another case of mistaken identity where the wrong man was detained and treated. The latest mistake happened after a patient left Greylands Hospital without permission. He'd been there for 8 months on an involuntary basis. Police, who were on the lookout for the patient, picked up an Aboriginal man who was taken to the hospital, wrongly identified as the missing patient, and then given an antipsychotic drug. David Weber reports.
The Mental Health Minister has said she was shocked to find out the wrong man was detained and drugged. Helen Morton has said it's hard to believe such a thing could happen in Western Australia in this day and age.
The policies and procedures are stringent about identifying people when they're made involuntary and when they're about to receive a Schedule 4 drug, and it would appear that those policies and procedures weren't carried out.
Yes, indeed. The policies are stringent, but actually it's very easy to just grab someone and drug them. And of course, every time someone is grabbed and drugged, someone's making money out of that. But the potential of that to actually just turn into a form of social and political repression is there. And of course, has existed in other countries at other times. We are near the end of the hour. Do stay with us for hour two. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's really great to be with you today, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.